Hey, and welcome to episode number 49 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal in Idaho.
You're in Idaho. I'm in Illinois. You are once again visiting offspring of offspring.
Offspring of offspring. The seventh offspring of offspring in my life. The reason for all the gray hair and the beard. I am riddled with grandchildren. That's the best.
You are a blessed. So I think the last time we were together, you had visited one, and now you're visiting the other new arrival.
Mm-hmm. Both born in May. Life. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hence our remote setup today, but we have some good stuff to get to. We had a question given to us in our mailbag about looking at the year 2025 to 2026 in Illinois athletics. So we want to examine that a little bit and visit what our top moments were from the year. Back in December, we looked at the top moments in the calendar year. Mm-hmm. But now we're going to look at the top moments in the year that was Illinois athletics. I'm just not sure yet on what I think was the biggest story of 2025-2026.
I was thinking about that. Like, if we picked something other than that, the outrage that we would receive. Maybe we should do that as rage bait. I hear rage bait is like really hot right now.
But some people are going to expect you not to pick that, but instead pick the other thing.
Well, obviously we're talking biases about the Music City Bowl, right? We haven't said it out loud yet. Oh, the Final Four. I see.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that the top story? The number
of
one
the
thing
decade?
In Illinois athletics this year?
Yes.
You're just going to, well, don't give it away.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Yes.
Have you ever heard of the word drama? Have you ever heard of building a story arc? You know, a
You're
build
right.
up, a climax, a denouement? Did you skip that part?
I'm going to have to Google that word later.
But before we do that, Illinois football had a little presence up in Chicago this week at Wrigley Field for Illini Night. Got a chance to be there and hear from Brett Bielema, so we're going to examine some of that and just the vibe in Chicago for Illinois athletics. Plus, we are about 5 months away from tip-off for Illinois basketball, and the hype is already real. And a coaching position has been filled. So we want to examine all of that, whether we're near or far. What do we do, Robert?
Well, how do we do it this time? I did the candle. You know what? I'm wearing a Block Eye shirt.
I can't carry
Should I light my
here.
Shirt on fire? No? All right.
Okay, sir, this here is a Wendy's.
Yes.
You would just call
somebody hit the button and light the eye.
Robert, I grew up as a Cubs fan, so on Tuesday night, I went to Wrigley Field, took my son. We went to Illini Night, took in a Cubs game, beautiful setting, beautiful ballpark, all of that. But I'm going to suggest to you that the atmosphere would have been pleasant for you, a non-Cubs fan, having come from St. Louis, and people in St. Louis, I'm told, see the Cubs as the hated enemy. But it was a great atmosphere.
Unlovable losers. Sorry. Yeah. Continue. I'm gonna
it was a great atmosphere up there in Chicago. And I wanted to start there just because look, maybe I'm new to the party. That was my first Illini Night. All the three major league teams, the Cubs, the White Sox, the Cardinals, they all do an Illini Night every year. And, you know, either it's been Bielema, it's been Brad Underwood, it's been Shauna Green. They've all participated in various ones, and players throw out the first pitch this year. It's Joe Barna, who's from Wheaton, and Matthew Bailey, who's obviously from the Quad Cities in Moline. They were there, but Pat Farrell was at the White Sox. I don't know who they have set up for the Cardinals game, which is, I believe, in July. But anyway, look, Chicago is the third biggest city in the country and is obviously the city of the state of Illinois, the big city. There was a lot of orange and blue. Well, Scott, duh, it was Illini night. Yeah, I know, but it just, it was my first Illini night, so maybe it's been like that in the past, but it just felt like Illinois is a thing in Chicago, the University of Illinois, Illinois Athletics. And, of course, they had the promotion for, there was a, you could tell there was a lot of students that had come, presumably from the area for Illini night. They offered discounts to it, but it was just, it was a good vibe.
Yeah, I heard from some people who were there who had gone in the past who said, yeah, this is a little different. Just in the people who didn't even, you know, go to the thing at the bar or whatever, just seeing the orange and blue in the crowd and, you know, people grabbing that orange t-shirt out of the closet kind of thing. So, yeah, I think you're even though this is your first one, I think your observation is right. It's something that is growing. I mean, look, we saw the release of the new, you know, Chicago-themed Illini gear this week. There's something to be built upon the Sears Tower, sorry, the Willis Tower being orange and blue for the Illini in early April. Yeah, it's time to capitalize on that and make Northwestern's Chicago's Big Ten team slogan seem even sillier than it sounded 10 years ago.
All right, I'm going to I did get to catch up with Brett Bielema as part of the media availability he had at the Brick House Tavern. Why is the Brick House Tavern called the Brick House Tavern there, Robert?
Am I supposed to know this?
You need to know.
The Brick House Tavern is called the Brick House Tavern because the bricks from Wrigley's outer wall fell through the window. I don't know. I'm making stuff up. I got no idea.
Jack Brickhouse.
Was he like a broadcaster?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, hey. On one of the foul poles, it says, hey, hey. That was his thing. The other foul pole, it says, holy cow.
For Harry. My knowledge of Chicago Cubs thing beyond Harry Carey is extremely limited.
That's what I'm here for.
Yes. Here's what I had. The guy who cut my hair, I think we've been through this before. I would ride my bike up to Al's barbershop. Al would cut my hair. Al was a Cubs fan. And so Al in the afternoon would be watching WGN and watching the Cubs game. So I would get my hair cut as a 13-year-old with Al watching the Cubs game, and I'm listening to Harry Carey. That's the limit of my Cubs knowledge.
When you were too hairy, you were watching Harry.
That's exactly right. That's a good slogan.
All right. Well, I asked Brett Bielema about the growth of the Chicago connection.
You know, it's been pretty fun for me. I've been up here the last couple weeks, couple times, and just the exposure of Illinois and people coming up to me in the hotel, walking the streets, is just another great indicator of how much growth we've had over the last 4 or 5 years, not just football, but as a university. So super excited for that. With that, I'll open it up.
Brett, through the years now, how's your connection grown with the city of Chicago for you and the program?
Yeah, I've always been a huge fan. You know, my wife and I's first date was in Chicago. So I've always kind of had a connection to the city and enjoyed coming here. I'm from Illinois, so it's always been a special thing. But I think, you know, when I took over the program, you know, in my opening press conference, I talked about building the players or building the program from within. And I think there's a million different reasons why we've had success, but I think our Illinois players, both in the Chicagoland area and downstate, have been a huge part of that success, and I'm glad that it's continued to go that way.
Where's the date?
Where was our date? We were at the Peninsula Hotel, separate rooms, of course, and then I think the first dinner was Nine Steakhouse. It's no longer in business now, but that was our first date.
Guys, and can this have a recruiting impact? Hey, you come here, you have success in Illinois, you can do something like this?
Yeah, you know, I guess it was probably a couple years ago we started being real selective of who we asked to come. But I think I asked Barna, I think Brett might have asked him first to do the Sox, because I was just looking at where the kids were at, and I thought, and Barna said, I'd love to do it, but I'm a Cubs fan. I don't want to throw for the Sox. And then we asked Pat Farrell, and Pat Farrell's a diehard Sox fan, so it was actually pretty cool how that played out. And then actually Matt Bailey, I called him. I said, hey, I'm going to bring him to Chicago Media Days. So it's a Big Ten Media Days. So I called him about that, and I said, hey, I got another favor. Last year Luke and I did a duet for the 17th stretch. Would you be interested? And I didn't know what he would say. And he jumped at it right away. He said, yeah, let's do it. For me, I love winning games. Don't get me wrong. But it's these little cool moments, these little side moments away from the game that really, you know, to see Joe Barna's mom and dad here, who I know during recruiting, we won them over to get him to play for us. And just to see the growth of those guys individually is really awesome.
We got to hang out at Bears OTAs a little bit last week. What was that like, and what were the conversations like with Ben Johnson?
Yeah, so Ian Cunningham and I developed a relationship. Our agency is the same. And last year I was going to come up, just never made it up. And then this year we were thinking about the Seahawks, the Bills, or the Bears. The Bears' schedule looked the best, and Ian hooked me up with Ben, and really that's kind of how it manifested. And then actually I had the Sox game, so I wasn't at the first day of OTAs, but everybody there just took care. I took six coaches up there, two offense, two defense, and a special teams coordinator. And I had never been to the Bears' practice facility. I didn't realize how awesome just the layout. Like the NFL, people get misconstrued. Sometimes those NFL facilities aren't really great just because it's different from college. But I really think the facilities they have, and then obviously the Reconnect organization of what Ben and he does on the field is pretty impressive.
What was it like for Barry to be around Ben? What can he take away from you?
Yeah, probably a good one for Barry to ask, but I know Barry had studied them quite a bit when we knew we were going. And actually Dan Rochard, the O-line coach, Mike New, who's my passing game coordinator, those guys had worked together in New Orleans, and so I think there's a lot of connections there that they were able to help with. But I know Barry and Mike really enjoyed their time there, especially offensively.
Okay, a few nuggets in there for us.
Yeah, definitely.
First of all, he dropped that Matthew Bailey is going to be one of the representatives at Media Days. I'm not totally surprised by that. I would have picked that or guessed that, but
yep,
good for Matthew Bailey. Number two is that, again, the connection with, I want to get into this, you know, the connection with the city of Chicago is growing, it sounds like. And number three, the Bears are worthy of being observed. Don't you think there would be a time like, hey, guys, we got to go, you know, let's go check out what NFL teams are doing and let's see if we can pick their brains. Where are we going to go? You want to go see the Bears? No, that's not happening. Now it does, because the Bears are legit.
Here's my question. People are going to throw things at whatever they're listening to us to on or watching. Where is Halas Hall? Like, where is the Bears facility in Chicagoland?
Lake Forest. It's a small...
Got a question. Where is Lake Forest?
A northern
See,
coast.
I told you. This is my idea that we have just a map behind us in the studio. Yeah. And then it's just like, hey, Robert, try to pin where a city is. Okay, Lake Forest sounds... Okay, wait, there's Oak Park River Forest. That's not nope. Lake Forest, though.
Nope, it's
a northern So Lake Forest... Okay, yeah. It sounds kind of richy, kind of North Shore.
You're on the right
Lake
track
Forest.
There.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so kind north...
Smaller, and the Bears facility is kind of tucked in there. Yep.
Got it. Okay.
It would be, you know, it. I don't know if it's quite the same distance, but it would be like if... You know, Illinois football had a facility up in Rantoul. You know, it's a ways away.
You are Can you speaking imagine? My language. A Illinois football facility in Rantoul, permanent facility. We take over the rest of what's left of Chanute and make that seven times the Smith Center. Scott, you've just landed on the single greatest idea and the one kernel of the one moment of an idea that leads to an Illini football national championship, a brand new facility in Rantoul.
Yep. And you know what? We just talked to Pat Embleton. I'm sure if he listens to this, he's going to be like, brilliant, guys. We want to be able to tell every potential player that, hey, our facility is miles away from campus. So if you could just find your way up there for practices and workouts and then get back down to Clay anyway.
You just have to be there, man. You just have to understand the feeling in the city. You got to go to Red Wheel for breakfast. You got to go to Otto's. You got to go. You got to live out the moments of Rantoul and Camp Rantoul to see why it was perfect, to see why a certain JUCO recruit ran away from the dorm one night and they found him in a booth at a bar passed out in 1998. We're not going to tell that story today. We're moving on.
New slogan, Rantoul, the Lake Forest of Champagne.
Okay. I love it. I love it. We could take over one of the old hangars. Sorry. Continue.
I almost said, you know, you got to – this was – maybe this is more of a basketball thing. You know, you got to recruit Chicago when – especially when the public league was really, really good. And maybe it still is. But, you know, you do need to make sure you're getting the ability to get the best players in Chicagoland to consider or come to Illinois.
Yeah.
So there's sort of the football aspect of it. But I'm – I ultimately – and I think this might be true of most fans, don't really look at the basketball team. Do they care where they come from? Is, you know, Chicago or Peoria or Croatia? If they're wearing the jersey, they're the team. And that's who you root for because it says, because we're all for Illinois, right?
Yep.
So to me, I don't know if it's so critical from a, that you got to have the in-state kid or the, I mean, the Chicago area kid. Just to have them, you just want to be able to say the local kid will consider the flagship school.
Yeah, but, and I think Joe Barna is a good example of that. You know, like it was Illinois or Oklahoma, and you know how many times have we seen the Chicago kid like that pick the Oklahoma like that, you know, or Michigan or Penn State or wherever they're in Notre Dame, wherever they're headed out of, you know, when a blue blood program comes along.
But you loved the Illini in the 80s when they came from California.
Sure.
It didn't, it ultimately didn't matter as much, but what does matter, I would say, is maybe more important in the bigger picture is that Chicago cares about Illinois. The Illini.
Yes.
In a football sense, in a basketball sense.
Yes.
And that I can only speak from my experience having grown up in the suburbs of Chicago. You know, Illinois is a very good school, but I don't know that everyone looks at it. Maybe it's changed. It's my experience. I don't think people looked at it as, well, that's my school. If you grow up in Omaha, you probably think about Nebraska's my school.
Yes.
But Chicago is within a very reasonable drive of so many major universities that are good academically and have alumni from all of those places. I mean, you can easily get to in a half-day drive to Michigan, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Purdue, Indiana, Wisconsin, Iowa, Iowa State. You get my point? So,
yep.
And those alums all live in the Chicago area. But there's a huge Illinois alumni base in Chicago. But for Illinois athletics to have said, to have put themselves in a position where they matter to the metropolitan area, I think it's huge.
Yep. And, you know, you look at the NFL statistics of where do the players come from. You know, they'll do them by state, and you'll see even some by, like, metropolitan area. And Chicago's always top 10 in terms of, like, the top 10 areas to find players. So they're always going to be there. The numbers are there. You know, I'm in Idaho. The entire state just at the last census cleared 2 million people for the first time. And it's, like, you know, three times the size of the state of Illinois. You know, the University of Idaho is not going to have the fertile recruiting grounds local that they can, you know, claim. It would always have to be out of state kind of thing. And, you know, to have 9-10 million people within an hour of the bean, Yeah, it's always going to be a benefit for us to find players. They will always be available, and we need to be as cool as possible so that ABI never comes back. ABI being anywhere but Illinois, which was this disease in the 90s, 2000, and 2010s, where kids would come out and give their list of 10 schools and not list Illinois because it was this, like, look, I'm leaving this state kind of thing. So get rid of ABI and make the thing cool and have a bunch of people wearing orange or blue at a Cubs game. I am all for all of these things happening.
I never totally understood that, though. Even going back to the, well, it looks like the U of I for me and Tom Cruise's line.
Yes.
Because, okay, maybe it makes sense if football was down and football players are like, oh, I'm going to go somewhere anywhere but Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
But academically, Illinois has always been an elite public institution.
Yes.
And there were kids in my school that looked at Illinois as a fallback. Like, well, if I don't get into the Ivy League I want to, I'll go just go to Illinois. But, like, you could do a lot worse than Illinois.
Yes.
A degree from Illinois is an accomplishment. I'm not disparaging any other schools. I'm just saying, like, amongst public universities, it's hard to beat Illinois' academic reputation.
Yes. Look, you were preaching to the choir here. As guy from the Metro East growing up in the St. Louis area, but on the Illinois side of the river, I never understood it. Like, Illinois to anyone in the Metro East is this glowing, shining academic institution of dream school for everybody in my high school. And then I meet everybody on my dorm floor who's from somewhere in Chicago, and it just wasn't that. It just didn't feel that. They would talk about the kids and, you know, where the other kids in their school went, and I didn't get into whatever, and so I'm here, but I might not be here. I might transfer up to if Cornell has a spot for me or whatever. And I just didn't understand. I mean, sure, Metro East isn't, you know, is probably podunk to people from Chicagoland, but it never made sense to me of why the reputation of Illinois for people coming down from Chicago wasn't the same as the reputation of Illinois for everybody coming up from the St. Louis area.
Exactly. I know that your family, I'm sure, would, when people would say when you were at school, well, how's Robert doing? They would say, well, he's on academic probation.
He's still there,
though. Really? Really? He's, and they'd say, really? But then they would say, but he's at Illinois. Oh! Hmm. Academic probation at Illinois.
It makes so much more sense now. So he's still a student, technically? Yes. He just has to get his grades up, or he won't be a student anymore.
Well, you know, it's not like going on probation
enrolled,
at, you know. Okay. So, Joe Barnett.
You could say Mizzou. It's fine. Sorry.
I'm not going to speak disparagingly.
Okay. Good.
And there will be no Vassar bashing in this episode either. Okay.
Moving on.
So Joe Barnett threw out the first pitch. Matt Bailey sang the seventh inning stretch with Brett Bielema. So they were a topic of question.
I don't know if you guys have seen him yet, but he's up about 280 pounds. Really, really liked the way he just physically has developed. He couldn't go on the practice field. A little shoulder injury, which is also the throwing arm today. So we told him to back off the velocity. Super excited for him. He's a very athletic. You know, since we got him, I've always said he's probably one of the best pure pass rushers we have. He's got the ability to long arm, use power, use bull, and then he also has some counter steps in him. So super excited for him to get in the mix this fall.
You said that you're excited about Matt in this defense.
Yeah.
What can he be in bodies?
Yeah, so he plays the chief. So the chief for this defense is kind of the, I wouldn't say featured, but maybe. Robbie Howe, who played it at Montana, had 480 tackles in college, right? It was just a tackling machine position, and that's the – I remember I was standing next to Coop, Roger Cooper, and I think Ronnie might have been next to us. There's two or three of the new guys. And, you know, in the early stages there, I would introduce guys to them in the weight room when they're working out, and Matt Bailey came walking up, and I said, this is Matt Bailey, and they all rolled their eyes. Like, I mean, physically, Matt's – obviously a very gifted player. You know, he had a pre-draft grade in that third round, fourth round, or some teams that matter, but second round or even one as a first. So I think they see that the talent that he has, But then you learn his mentality, his makeup, his demeanor. He's really, truly, in my opinion, grown into an incredible leader, and super excited to see him in the system.
Anything stand out to you?
I mean, I asked the question in February of Bobby Hauk of what's going to be the name, since, you know, that's, they've used Stinger safety before, they've used Aztec, they've used whatever, and I know that at Montana they've used Chief before, and so it sounds like the Brian Urlacher position in this defense, he's the one who made the position famous as a Lobo before, is going to be Chief. So,
all right, explain this for those who aren't familiar.
Sure. The Rocky Long defense, which is what this is, has a make every play. Maybe he's a linebacker, maybe he's a safety, but he's in the center of the field and everything is funneled to him. It was made famous by Brian Urlacher at New Mexico. When Urlacher was there, they call the position the Lobo under Rocky Long. And that Lobo position just didn't stay there. It was the same used at other places. Like Iowa State has a different name for that position. Everybody has a different kind of name that they've used. And I've heard Chief before. And so it's the guy in the middle who's the quarterback of the defense. And it was used at Montana, and it was obviously it was used when Rocky Long went to San Diego State. Same kind of thing, that they have one guy. He's not really a safety. He's not really a linebacker. So you need a different position name. You know, people might remember, you know, Ryan Walters used a fifth defensive back, called him a star. You know, people have different names for different positions like this, Stinger, whatever. That's what they used, I think, at Arizona State with it. And here it'll be Matt Bailey. If he doesn't lead the Big Ten in tackles, something's wrong, because this defense will be set up for him to make the tackle on basically every play.
More than 100 tackles?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. If so, not, something went wrong.
So averaging close to 10 plus tackles a game.
I would think so. I would think so. I think the closest Illinois fans would have for it is the 2015 defense in Clayton Fedulum. That was a similar, it wasn't the same defense, but it was a similar, like, here's this and here's this, and that guy is, you know, you've Rover for this position before. Again, different defenses have different jobs, and some will use Rover for that position and some will use Rover for this position. But it's a guy who's a bit positionless and is in the center of the field. It, you know, it's in a sense, this the defense has three safeties kind of thing. And this is the middle safety who can sometimes come all the way forward, or he can be back or whatever. It's not what you saw with Miles Scott and playing 20 yards off the line of scrimmage last year. It would be him, center of the field, making every play. Like, I mean, go watch Brian Urlacher film in college. He was a linebacker in the NFL, but he was a safety in college. He was this position, and he ran around with his head cut off making every single tackle. And that's what Matt Bailey will be this fall.
And the position apparently will be referred to as the Chief.
There you go. Obviously, like after the fire truck, obviously, yeah. 100%, we will get him one of our helmets from the fire engine, and Engine 77, he's our fire chief.
Okay, there, just making sure.
Yep.
Just making sure. Because Brian Urlacher played the Lobo, right? He was the Lobo,
yes.
Right? Okay.
Lobo, Aztec, Rover, Stinger. It has many, many names, including one of them being Chief.
All right, and finally, Matt Fortuna, who is one of, I think, a very good national writer of college football, and he's based in Chicago, so he was there. And he asked Brett Bielema a little bit more about, there's been kind of a little bit of back and forth about, you know, because the SEC had their meetings, and the, you know, is the SEC the best league in football, or is it the Big Ten? And Bielema kind of pushed back on that. I believe it was Greg Sankey that, you know, was kind of saying, hey, we, of course he's the commissioner of the SEC. But anyway, so Brett Bielema was asked for a little follow-up on that.
Right. You tweeted something to this effect, but it's the end of meeting season. You guys had yours 2 weeks ago. SEC had theirs last week. You've been in both leagues. When the commissioner comes out and says the SEC is by far and away the best conference in America still, just your reaction to that?
I think there's so much good football. It's just, I think the perspective I always go back to is it's 2026. And you have to live in the moment you're in. You can't go back to the past. And, you know, when I went in that league in 2013, there was a definite difference, no doubt, in my opinion. From my perspective, you know, being at Arkansas, went to three straight bowl games, had some success. But at that point, there was just two different kind of leagues, just depth-wise. And I think now the world of college football, Indiana proved it, right? Like, and I told Josh when I took this job, because of the portal, because of the revenue share, NIL, there's never been a better time to take over a program because you can literally flip your roster so fast. And I think that's a big one. I know it got misconstrued. I did a on three, talked about 32. I don't want 32, but 24-team playoff. The thing that I think it'll actually enhance, in my opinion, the regular season, because, you know, you look at a game like us at Wisconsin a year ago where Wisconsin beat us, right, and kind of knocked us out of that conversation. A game at the end of the year, we play Northwestern every year at the end. That game now, when it could, you know, for them or us to get in the playoffs, or, you know, if we go to 24, probably the two first games will be home games. You know, to have a home game in Champaign-Urbana in the middle of December would be pretty awesome, right? So I think the 2014 playoff format would actually increase the value of the regular season, not decrease it. That's just a narrative that someone wants to put out there. But I'd say there'd be more of an emphasis on teams that are in that 9, 10, 11 wins, that every win you hold on to is a chance to put you higher, whether it be a bye or a home game or seeding. It's just a really, really high value.
You've always carried the flag for the Big Ten. And it feels like no matter how many bowl games you guys beat the SEC or whomever it at the end of the year, there's still this sense of like, well, the SEC got snubbed from the playoff. Or, you know, I mean, do you think the 2014 playoff would almost like leave it to play on the field and allow you guys to wear it?
I think you can only run from that narrative so long, right? And there's so many, so many opportunities, but it's hard to erase 25, 50 years of history, right? Like, I remember when I was in the Big Ten Conference, I was at Wisconsin, and we did a 25-year summary when we went to Leaders and Legends. I'm sure a lot of you guys remember that day. And the one thing that we had done a 25-year and a 50-year comparative study, and in that 25-year window, the most wins by team was Ohio State and Wisconsin. But everybody wanted to talk about Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and Nebraska, because Nebraska was in the league. And I got really pissed. And I remember Coach Alvarez grabbed me and he said, hey, you can't change 25 years of history before we got here, right? And I think that's kind of what's happening now at Illinois. People just don't see Illinois in the light that we've been in the last couple of years, and it takes a while for that to get used to. I understand it. I can't control it. But I think that's also true. Like, even Indiana, right? Like, what they did is unbelievable. Like, the way they did it and how they did it and what Kurt did is unprecedented. And it's kind of like it's just, like, floating out there, right? So I just think that it takes a long time to change people's opinion of what they've seen.
So there you go, Robert. Just to underscore again, incredible story that was Indiana football. Is that the takeaway there from what we just listened to? How incredible that was?
Serenity now. Serenity okay. Now. Serenity now. Okay. I'm good. I'm fine. I don't have to think about it. I didn't want to think about it. I'm thinking about it. I don't want to think about it.
It's just the head
Next
coach.
Question.
The head coach brought that up. That's why I just mentioned it.
I've settled on this. Have I told you this? I don't think I've told you this. I've settled on this. I think here's how it's going to make sense to me. It's going to come out that Indiana had a way to listen to all helmet communications. They put a chip in every defender's helmet so they could immediately tell them what the play call was. And the reason they won the national title is because they hacked the helmet cams. That's the only way this entire story makes sense. I need to sleep at night, and that's how I can sleep at night, is guessing that it's some level of like cheating or something, because it's the only way national football champion Indiana makes sense.
If that were true, it's not. If that were true, there would be an analyst who would have to serve a half game suspension.
Yes, you're right. All right. Yes.
No, but
the Connor Stallions. What would be the name of the Connor Stallions? What's a good Hoosier name for a Connor Stallions? Put it in the comments down below. Okay. I'm going to leave that one alone. Obviously, I'm just trying to process the fact that Indiana won a national championship in football. It makes no sense. I don't get it. It had to be something.
Okay, but there were other points made there by Brett Bielema. I was just trying to rib you, but
yeah, I think it's a really good thing for him to say, though, of like, look, it's going to take a long time before people forget that Illinois was one of the five worst programs in the first 20 years of this century. Five worst.
But I think there's a bigger point there too that it's going to take a while for people to forget that the SEC might not be as dominant or even the best conference anymore in football. It still clearly is. It's still clearly from top to bottom the SEC and the Big Ten.
Yes.
And year to year, it's going to be a little bit different in how you would view who's the better conference.
Yes.
But I think the point Bielema is trying to make, and I'm curious if you see it this way too, is that players aren't all going to one place or one region anymore. There's good football across the Big Ten. And people need to stop looking at it as SEC 1, Big Ten 2.
Yes, definitely. And I've been in debates with fans. I remember a whole bunch of SEC fans in the comments when we beat South Carolina and this and that of like, you know, the thing they've shifted to from it's just different and it's just harder and this and that. Now that Big Ten has won three titles in a row, there's this shift to, well, the top of the Big Ten and the top of the SEC, but obviously they can't hang. You know, there's truth to that, that when their basement team like a Vandy is suddenly really good, the Big Ten still has four or five teams that are putting up 3-9, 2-10, 4-8 seasons, that type of thing. So it's understandable that, yes, the talent-wise, there's probably still a little more in the SEC. NFL draft continues to show that out, but it's starting to really even out. But people are still slow on the uptake of, you know, the Lane Kiffin comments from 2 years ago, even from this last year, where he's just like, you know, sure, Big Ten is one or two teams that's like that. But for us, it's every week. Every team we play is that talented as the top of the Big Ten. And that's what the difference is. I think that's the next hurdle that people need to like, oh, wait. Both conferences are really bringing a lot of talent. And with the money in the Big Ten right now, and with the share of the TV money much larger than even the SEC, there's going to be more recruits wanting to head toward those things and those TV times and those type of things, and it's going to just continue evening out. So, yeah, piece by piece here, and one part of that is for people to realize Illinois is not a joke anymore.
Well, things are always going to take time. Look at at baseball right now, going into the super regionals, look at the number of hosts at regionals that didn't make it through. I think it's seven teams out of 16, maybe eight, that didn't make their way through their own regional that they hosted. And there's four seeds that made supers. Usually there's one that pokes through every year, but no, baseball always is going to be skewed towards the warmer climates, towards the West Coast and to the Sun Belt, but you've got your Troys of the world and your St. John's and whoever that has made noise, and you've got some big time programs that were in the World Series last year that didn't even make the tournament this year, and there's always more variance in baseball. But the thing is people can fund scholarships now in that sport, and talent is dispersed. Football is a different beast because there's only certain types of talent that will be dispersed through the Big Ten and the SEC. I'm talking about the physical side. I mean, you can be an outstanding technical blocker at the FCS level, and you're just not going to cut it necessarily if you're not just not big enough and strong enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
So yep. I'm comparing apples and oranges here. My point is this: the power bases in several sports may be shifting and more spread a little bit. So don't assume that just because it's SEC that they're the better team, I think is kind of the bigger point that Brett Bielema is trying to make. And but of course the commissioner is for a conference that's going to carry the flag, and of course a Big Ten head coach is also going to say, hey, I think we're pretty good. So proof will be in the pudding.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. I don't know. I still don't know how to feel about it. Like the last 3, 4, 5 years, as the playoff has gotten bigger and this and that, I have been over the top with my, look, bowls still matter, bowls still matter, bowls still matter. Sure, there's now 12 teams that go to the playoff, and that's the true thing. But the best Big Ten team against the best SEC team to not make the playoff in the Citrus Bowl is still a big deal. If we go to 24, suddenly I can't make that argument anymore, you know? And these seasons will just be about, did we get in the playoff? And I don't know if I'm ready for that. I don't know if I'm... it just doesn't fit the world I used to... The world I grew up in was Lloyd Carr choosing to kick a field goal against Illinois in 1992 so that Michigan... I'm sorry, Gary Moeller choosing to kick a field goal in 92 because that meant they could win the Big Ten, and that was more important to get the tie and win the Big Ten than it was to stay in the hunt for the national title. And that was a decision that a head coach made in 1992, that conference titles meant a lot, that the Rose Bowl meant everything, that getting that Rose Bowl spot was what they wanted. And I've had to now adjust to what every other sport is, which is, yeah, it's about winning a national title, the end. Getting the playoff, win it all, the end. And it's an adjustment for me.
Well, like Brett Bielema said, it's hard to run from 25 years of history, or in your case, 35 years of history. You're still adjusting, but that's all right. Yep. You'll get there.
Someday.
Grandpa. Maybe. Grandpa Rosenthal.
Oh, yeah. This is perfect. I mean, I am the old grandfather standing on the porch, shaking his fist, screaming, the bowls still meant something to me. Why are we tossing everything in the trash? I mean, I get it. I understand. And look, the rise of the Big Ten has helped the rise of Illinois football, and that has made my life more pleasant. And so if, as part of that, we move into a playoff culture and not a bowl culture, so be it. But dang it, I still love bowl games.
And like magic, we're suddenly in slightly different places with our background here. Unlike the I, presented by the U of I Credit Union. At a slight pause, I'm at Logic, yes. Actually, at corner of St. Mary's and Neal's, our fine sponsor, offering a space here for me to use to record our podcast. But the room that I was in needs to be vacated so another group can use it, so I'm in a different space. More than you cared to know, I'm sure.
No, I don't think people care about that.
Somebody would have said there was, it looks different. Would have really rattled them.
Yes. I had to go in the last hour and a half and go pick up my grandkids from preschool, second to last day of preschool. Then my granddaughter wanted to show me her art book that they gave them to take home since the last day is tomorrow. I'm going to share some artwork with the crowd. This is for you watching on the video. The title here is Jackson Pollock Inspired Transfer Print. So there we are. As you
hey
said,
kids,
when I showed you this
throw
earlier.
Paint at a wall.
Yes, that's good right. You're right. Scott made that when I showed this to him a little bit ago, he made the comment it's a little more Van Gogh than Pollock. So we might want to talk. I'll bring her in later. We could talk to her of like, you know, let's learn your impressionists. You are 3 years old. I just can't believe 3-year-olds in preschool are like, okay, kids, today we're going to do Jackson Pollock art.
I feel like three-year-olds, it's the only art they could.
It's a great point. It's a great point. Yes.
Pointillism, not yet.
Yes. Yes.
Although I heard your granddaughter is going through a cubist phase.
Yes, she is. And she'll be fine. She'll be fine. she apparently only wants to use orange and blue paints, which is, I mean, warms Bolo's heart. Let's just say it like that.
Hey, they have to do whatever they can to earn your love.
Mm-hmm. I learned all about Peppa Pig, too. This is the latest thing. I know nothing about Peppa Pig. Apparently, it's a big show. She wants to watch more Peppa Pig.
Have you entered Bluey phase? That's a whole new thing.
Yes, with the other ones in St. Louis. I've been introduced to Bluey. So, yes, again, I say this all the time. I am getting the parenting phase that I missed as a grandparent. And I'm learning everything that all humans know that I missed out on because I wasn't part of any of it.
Well, what would it take for Quentin Coleman, Illinois' incoming star freshman, what would it take for him to earn your love?
He's from the Metro East. He's from O'Fallon. So he is preloaded with Illini Metro East love.
I bring it up because he's with Team USA, and he was part of some games this week, and I know you laid eyes on it.
Yes. I believe their next game is going on right now, I think, as we're recording this. It was supposed to be sometime this afternoon, so I blame Peppa Pig for making me miss that. But, yeah, he's I wrote about this week. People are expecting him to be Wagler, and I think he's really talented, but his game is more like Boswell than it is Wagler. Like, he is a grab the important rebound, make the important pass, defend the other team's best guard. He's that guy. I don't think he's, I mean, he's a scorer for sure, but I don't think he's a Wagler type scorer. I mean, he's an NBA player. I'm not saying any of this. It's just his type of game. When you're watching these U18, the FIBA games, his game is very, very junkyard dog. He leads the team as rebounds as a 6'4 guard, and he tied for the team lead in assists. And
really think that would fit in a Brad Underwood
roster? Yeah. Oh, whoever would have guessed that Underwood would go after someone with great court vision and the ability to rebound as a point or as a two guard. Yeah, he's gonna be great.
Way down the road, we will get a preseason top 25. But there are already people that are putting it out there. And C.J. Moore, who I think is an excellent writer for The Athletic, already put out the, now that on the other side of draft withdrawals, who's back, what do the rosters look like, here's what we can start to project as a top 25. And C.J. Moore, one person's opinion, slight edge to put Illinois as number one going into this season. Again, we are 5 months away from the first game.
Yep.
Probably 5 months in, I don't know, maybe it's 5 months on the day. I haven't looked at it, but we've got some time here, and rankings are worth exactly what they're worth to you.
Yep.
But he will not be the only person, in my opinion, that will consider Illinois as the number one team in the nation going into it. And I think any of the AP top 25 voters, the spread of where they'll put Illinois, where do you think the spread will be from one to what?
I don't think anybody will put them below five. Yeah. I don't think anybody will. They're a Final Four team coming back with, I think it was Moore in that article who said, what was the stat? Four of the guys had at least 19 starts or something like that. Mm-hmm. So while it's technically you lost two starters in Wagler and Boswell, you still have guys that, you know, Jake started half the games, Andre started half the game. So you really technically have four guys with starting experience coming back, plus Stephon Vaux, plus Quentin Coleman, plus Big Z off the bench. So, yeah, I can't see anybody putting them lower than five. And if that's the case, again, I wrote about this recently. I think I said it on one of our pods. The three times Illinois has been in the top five in the preseason AP poll, number two in 85, coming off that Elite Eight run and having most everybody back. Number three in 02, again, coming off an Elite Eight with most everybody back, but Lucas Johnson had torn his ACL. And then in 05, they were number five preseason, moved up to four after beating Gonzaga, and then to number one after beating Wake Forest. So, yeah, those, I mean, if Illinois is top five, those are the three other seasons it's competing with for preseason ranking.
What if they're number one?
I won't know what to do with myself.
It's just a ranking.
Yeah, but still, it's like it's the vote of confidence of all votes of confidence. I almost said vote of confidences, but I mean, it's never happened for football, and it's never happened for basketball. I wouldn't even know what to do.
We'll find out together, because there's a decent chance. I mean, what Duke, Florida? They're probably in the mix to be preseason number one.
There are a lot of people who, you know, people have explained it with Indiana football. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, they lost a lot of players, but they should be number one until they prove they're not or whatever. So there will be some voters that do that kind of thing. So, yeah, there will be some of that, but for Michigan, you know, some people like, okay, Michigan gets a few votes for one, but yeah. I mean, Final Four team with this much back, it's hard to not consider Illinois number one. It's hard.
Ooh. What a world. What a time.
Can't believe the world. What a time. What are the words coming out of my mouth?
One other item of importance to get to. This week, it was announced that the third head coach in Illinois softball program history will be Jenna Hall, who is already in the Hall of Fame for Illinois. One of the first softball players, I believe she was the first softball player to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Daniel Zimkowitz is also in it, and Nicole Evans. But after her playing career, which was very good here at Illinois, tremendous hitter and tremendous power, she went into coaching and has built an impressive resume as an assistant in the Big Ten. She was with Ohio State, and then she has been the head coach at Ohio University. Several 30-plus wins for her in a row. She's been a two-time conference coach of the year in the MAC, and she has come home, so to speak, to take over the Illini program that was built by Terry Sullivan when they started the program in the very early 2000s, and then Tyra Perry, who was let go at the end of this season, but did capitalize on the success that Terry Sullivan had built and made four NCAA regionals. But obviously the success was lacking the last few years, so they make a change, and in comes Jenna Hall, the alum. And the enthusiasm around the program, or this hire, at least from the alums, is pretty energetic.
Yeah, it's a, I don't know, no-brainer of all no-brainer hires kind of thing, you know. She has the exact resume you'd want. Even set aside is maybe Illinois' greatest softball player ever, but you look at the resume, it's, okay, assistant for a while, assistant at Ohio State for a long time, then assistant at Pitt, then you get your first job, you go to Ohio, you're MAC Coach of the Year twice. This last year, they won 38 games, the most they've won in 10 years or something like that. And now you're ready for the next jump. And that jump is to your program that you are in the Hall of Fame, and you go back home and try to rebuild your program. I mean, I'd have to look it up. It feels like, I believe, you know, well, 01 was the first year, or 2000 was the first year. Do you remember? For the program.
I have 01 in my head, but there was a, and I don't know if this was the year. There was a year where they played as an independent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the program was new and it, you know, so it didn't join the conference officially until they had a year under their belt. But yeah
as I recall, right around and there. I'd have to look this up. Like in my memory, the program wasn't really a thing. It was just getting started until Jenna Hall came along. And then she's an All-American and she's like first team All-American. And she's what she hit 481 that one year or whatever. Yeah, it was in the press release. Record. Like, yes. So she was this monster and suddenly the program's built. And I think they made a regional final with her, you know? So as far as storylines go, this is like Red Grange coming back to coach the football team, you know, like the person who put the program on the map is now the head coach. That's great stuff. I'm all for dream job stuff. This is 2026 is the year of the dream job.
She is one of two Illini head coaches that are in the Illinois Hall of Fame as players. Do you know who the other one is?
Please hold. I was going to say Poeta at first, but no, he's not the coach anymore. Should this be obvious? Hold on. Hold on. Mike Small.
No.
It is not Mike Small. Who is it?
It is Renee Sloan, women's golf head coach.
Oh, my gosh, yes, yes.
But when I was looking this up, I was surprised to know Renee Sloan, the best women's golfer in program history, probably. Becky Beach is the other women's golfer that's in the Hall of Fame. She's a two-sport athlete, obviously, with having played women's basketball, and she played in the 1970s. I thought Mike Small was in the Hall.
Hmm.
I can't. Interesting. He's not. He's in the state's golf Hall of Fame.
Yes.
But I guess he didn't make the Hall as a player yet, at least.
Stricker
is that strange
did.
To you?
Yeah, it is strange to me. Yeah, Langley, Stricker did from in. That same team. Yeah.
Did Langley make it?
Yeah. I mean, Langley won a individual title. So did Peters. So, you know, NCAA champion, that's going to get you in the playing Hall of Fame. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
There's one other previous head coach that is a Hall of Famer for his playing days. That was Justin Spring.
Yeah.
But he is no longer the men's gymnastics head coach. He transitioned to women's gymnastics coaching at Alabama a few years ago.
Interesting.
So Jenna Hall, and it's in the name, Hall, Hall of Fame.
Yep. Time to get the program back.
So how would you look at the year? It's the time of year when you can look back at the best stories or the top stories and there's no doubt what the top story is for this past academic athletic year. Undoubtedly, the Final Four run for Illinois basketball, third time in program history, recent program history for most of us, that the Illini have made the Final Four, and a very, very real chance that the program will be in another one this year. Coming year.
Yeah, that it has to be. Yeah, there's nothing that comes close. Is it the biggest? Would it be the biggest moment of the 2020s?
Yeah.
I think so. You know, if we're talking 2010s, you know, baseball was in a super regional against Vandy and almost made it to Omaha. And you know, there are other sports having big moments. Volleyball makes the national championship in 2011, but loses. You know, there were big moments. Or volleyball with Poulter and Bassinelli. That's, what was that, 2017?
2018. Yeah. Yeah, nothing.
But for the 2020s, yeah.
Nothing reverberated across the fan base like this, even more so, Robert, than bowl win, the Citrus Bowl, and the Music City Bowls.
Yep. I mean, we say it all the time, but if just in the last 52 months of the calendar. Elite Eight, Citrus Bowl win, Music City Bowl win, Final Four. All four of those would take the cake for the 2010s. Like, you know, it's crazy. It really is.
All right. What's your number two story of the year?
I mean, for me, it's beating another SEC team in a bowl game. It wasn't, you know, we talked to SEC earlier. This wasn't just we got to two pretty good bowl games and won. This was we played South Carolina, who everybody said should have been in the playoff, and we beat them when they were just like, we belong in the playoff. Illinois doesn't. And then we beat them in the Citrus Bowl. And then we turn around and beat, we win nine games with a last second field goal to beat Tennessee in the state of Tennessee. And another SEC fan base walked out of a stadium just gritting their teeth and grumbling and griping and everything else. So, yeah, to me, number two is easily the bowl win, especially winning on a walk-off field goal.
Well, my number two, I'm suddenly doubting myself because of your explanation there.
No, say it. Do it.
Well, my number two...
Don't let my footballness overwhelm.
My number two was Keaton Wagler.
Hmm.
The whole story of Keaton Wagler. The whole thing.
Yeah.
From,
that's a good one.
No doubt it's a big story.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the recency bias is leaking in there because it happened after the bowl win. I don't think, you know, when the bowl win happened, I don't think we knew the total package of Keaton Wagler. But we knew he was good at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. They had made the switch, you know, after the UConn loss in Madison Square Garden, for him to be, you know, off the ball, and he just took off. I mean, the breakthrough was the Purdue game in late January.
Yeah, on the that, and I have that one on my list as a moment.
That would be, yeah. I guess I'm looking at just big stories.
Absolutely, yeah.
So to
the greatest freshman in Illinois history?
The greatest freshman season, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, what he did in 1 year... We'll put his name in the rafters, and it will. And he's going to be drafted later this month as a lottery pick, and launch what should be a very good NBA career. So,
yeah. So he has not only the greatest freshman season in Illini history, but also the single greatest individual performance in Illini history at Purdue. Like, yes,
well,
Dave Downey scored 54, but.
In a modern era, at least.
Yes, but to go on the road at, what were they at the time, number four? Go on the road at number four and put up 46 points with, what, 8 of 9 threes or whatever? Yeah. Didn't he tie the team? No, 9 of 11 threes? Tied the team record for threes in a game?
No, set it
in a performance on the road in one of the hardest places to play in the country?
8 was a record that had been set by several people.
Plummer is the last
passed
one.
It up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plummer.
So this, the best shooting
no,
night.
Shannon Jr. did it.
Oh, that's right. The UCLA game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the best shooting night ever. The maybe most impressive individual performance ever. Apologies to Downey's 54 at Indiana. And, the single greatest freshman season. Hard to top it.
So I would put number three then the bowl win. And just okay. The not only the win, but the, you know, the completion of 19 wins in two seasons and back to back bowl wins in the best bowls you can be in that aren't college football playoff bowls, and beating SEC opponents, including Tennessee has a little more history to it in people's minds. That's a little bit more of a football name than South Carolina even is.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm with you there. So what's your third?
My third was the women beating Colorado in the tournament in a rebuilding year. Like, that gets lost with what Shauna did here. This was supposed to be a year... You lost everybody. You had one starter returning, and you go out and win another NCAA tournament game and get to the round of 32 again. Like, it shouldn't have been done with freshman, sophomore, junior, sophomore. You know, this was the youngest team to make the NCAA tournament field. So, to me, winning an NCAA tournament game, which hasn't happened with the women's program very often in Champaign, and especially not in the last 20 years, but to do it in a rebuilding year, to do it when you've lost all your starters and you're the youngest team in the Big Ten, that's just so incredibly impressive.
So I had that as number four for my story.
I mean, we can kind of say it because I had Wagler 46 as my four, so we're kind of, you know, once we go here, we're hitting all the same ones.
All right, so then I think the mystery will be who our fifth. All right, so should I go first?
What if we guess each other's?
Oh, is this like the newlywed game?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man.
It's like Karnak.
Okay, you guess mine.
Shutman walk off over Oregon?
Well, I'm doing stories.
Okay.
So that could be a story.
Yes.
That could, I mean, to me, that's more of a moment, a great moment.
Yeah, Oregon could win it all. Like, let's not be crazy here. They're good, and you know, walk off to beat them at home with a big crowd. That's a moment. But no, that was my guess for yours.
Okay,
and I'm wrong.
Yours, I'm gonna say, I don't know. Can you give me a hint?
It is not one of the big three sports.
Okay, I'm gonna say. Golf not making nationals.
It should be that, but it is the longest long jump in the world in 2026, which led to us, and yes, it is still, somebody asked that as part of the one of the Q&A questions that we received for the mailbag was, is Robert ever going to jump? Yes, Robert is going to jump. Yes, it will still happen. Robert might have been told that he can't do it on Illinois property for fear of certain legal reasons. So Robert has had to shift to where he can do it. Might try it out here in Idaho. But no, my fifth is like, I mean, she could still win a national title here. What, next weekend?
Yeah.
And then that would be, you know.
Okay.
Then what are we talking about, you know?
And that would impact Dyke Edelman.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, that's always the thing when you have that discussion in June is some track person. Who was that hurdler years ago that finished second and nearly won an individual title and would have probably given him the Edelman Award. But yeah. So, yes, Sophia Beckman is my number five. Like, just having one of the best long jumpers in the world in college.
And they are adding some sensational talent. They've already announced players that are coming through the transfer portal that Petros Kyprianou is adding.
He might just win a national title here.
If anybody could, it'll be him.
Yep.
Okay, well, I lumped this together. My fifth biggest story of the year is, I'm going to call it, coaching changes.
Mm, yeah.
This is one of the highest turnover years in coaching history. Josh Whitman's tenure is what I mean to say. So three head coaches in your three different reasons. One, at women's tennis, Evan Clark deciding to step back. Was not the preference of Josh Whitman or anyone else, but he decided to step back from coaching, focus on other things. So there is a resignation if you will. Wrestling made a change with Mike Poeta, as we know, he was subject of an investigation for some financial things, and he was not retained after that investigation. So Jeremy Hunter stepped up to take over that job, and then we just talked about Tyra Perry. She was let go for, you know, competitive reasons, and Jenna Hall takes over. So it's just this whole year, it's just been in a higher turnover. There's been a lot of stability in the head coaching positions, and for one reason or another, it's a lot of change. So there's only a few coaches now that were not put in place by Josh Whitman, and I would say the those that are still in place from when he got here, and they were here before the previous athletic director now. There's no Mike Thomas hires left. Everybody's been hired.
Yeah.
Everybody's been hired by Josh Whitman or I guess Ron Gunther, Dan Hartlib at baseball, Mike Small at golf. Is there anybody else?
No, because Janet Rayfield retired and Katie Holteen's in her first year. So, yeah, I think
Brad Dancer.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
At tennis.
Yeah.
And I think those three have earned the right. They'll go out on their terms.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Barring something unforeseen, that they'll go out when they're ready to be done.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything else, and those are legacy type guys. Everything else is this is entirely Josh Whitman's coaching staff, if you will.
Yeah, I strongly considered soccer getting a bid. You know.
Oh well, yeah, honorable mention for sure.
Yeah, because your first year as a head coach, taking over for a retiring coach, and the program had faded a bit, and all of a sudden you make the tournament. That's, and you did it with fair number of freshmen and younger players. And so, yeah, that was, who knows? Maybe we see the same thing from softball. A coaching change sparks a good first year next spring.
Well, as Brett Bielema pointed out, you can always Kurt Cignetti something.
Yes,
and go on an unbelievable run.
Yes, should I do our predictions for the Edelman and the freshman award?
Go for it.
Okay, I'll read you I have the list in front of me. So, the Edelman award is to the male and female athlete, the best athlete at Illinois in the entire year. And then there's also a freshman. They've also added a newcomer of the year award. So I think some of these are really obvious of who will win. But I'll read and. I'll just you give your guess and then I'll give my guess. Okay.
Okay.
Female athlete of the year. There are five finalists: Barry Wallace, women's basketball; Chloe Cho, gymnastics; Izzy Lee, soccer; McKenna Schaefbauer, tennis; Sophia Beckman, track and field. Who do you think will win the Edelman?
I think it's going to be Beckman or Barry Wallace.
I totally agree. I think it's a two-horse race. I believe.
Yes. And it might be pending results in Oregon for the national title when it comes to the long jump.
Yes. Male athlete of the year, the Edelman Award, there are seven finalists: Keaton Wagler, Luke Altmaier, Max Herendine, Brandon Dang, Kenta Miyoshi in tennis, Jip DeGreff in track and field, and Cannon Webster in wrestling. So from those seven, I mean, Brandon Dang did win, what, pommel horse national title? So... who do you think is the Edelman?
I'm still going Keaton Wagler.
Yeah, I think it has to be. Yeah. Should we just skip to male freshman of the year then?
Yeah, and it's also Keaton Wagler.
Yes.
The one thing I want to say about that is I think on that list of nominees, Illini pitcher Aiden Flynn is not on that list because when they brought that out, it was still middle of the baseball season.
Yeah.
If you look at what Aiden Flynn did, he should be a finalist for Freshman of the Year across Illinois sports. It doesn't match what Keaton Wagler did, but Aiden Flynn had a tremendous freshman season.
Yeah. Yep.
So I just want to give him his flowers there.
Absolutely. So the other finalists for Freshman of the Year, A.J. Putty, baseball, Keaton Wagler, Gabriel DeBrew, tennis, Luke Pelkman's track and field, and Colin Kelly wrestling. But yes, I mean, has there ever been a more lock of the lock? If you're second team All-American, consensus All-American as a true freshman, you're probably going to be freshman of the year at your school. Female freshman of the year. Here we go. Sierra Parchment, women's basketball. Summer Clancy, gymnastics. Ashlyn Adams, soccer. Addie Kitty, softball. Jaciona Jiro Holt, track and field. And Alyssa Aguayo, volleyball.
Sierra Parchment.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Outstanding freshman.
Yeah, there's some like... Go ahead.
How these two... we said before, how the men's and women's basketball teams mirrored each other, that they both went as far as they went, in large part because of two outstanding freshmen on the court.
Yes.
For the men, it was Wagler and Mirkovic, who I guess Mirkovic... Was he on that nominee list for freshman?
He was not for freshman, no. They usually just do one per sport.
Per sport, gotcha, so, yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And the women were Parchment and Destiny Jackson. But yeah, Parchment for me. And any of these choices, it really doesn't – it's not meant to diminish what the other seasons were for the other individuals.
Yeah, and for people who don't know, like what for the things we talk about with David Mirkovic, like – if he stays all 4 years, is he the most favorite Illini basketball player of all time? Like, what type of legendary status does he achieve if he were to stay for 4 years? Similar with Sierra Parchment. Like, she could be the superstar of Illini women's basketball.
But she's got Barry Wallace right next to her. So.
Right. Good problem to have. Okay, let me get to the newcomer year then. For female newcomer of the year, Maddie Weber basketball, Nora Wallen cross country, Kayla Jackson soccer, Skylar Brennan softball, Michelle Kaner swim and dive, Kara Meester tennis, Megan Humphreys track and field, Kenna Phelan volleyball.
I'd go either Humphreys from track and field or Maddie Weber from women's basketball.
Yeah.
I don't know how to compare apples and oranges there.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think so, too. Maddie Weber was just... Where'd she come from? Villanova?
Yeah.
Yeah. What a pickup. Male newcomer of the year. Andre Stojakovic, basketball. James Thompson, Jr., football. Dane Huddleston, golf. Andreas Hansen, track and field. Spencer Moore, wrestling.
Well, the low-hanging fruit here is high-profile sports, but I would still go with Andre Stojakovic.
Yeah, I can't see how it would not be. Like, yes. There's no – basketball has to sweep these, right? You know, the Ike Edelman has to go to Wagler. The freshman is so very obviously Wagler. And of the newcomer of the year, look, James Thompson was huge for the football team, you know. Dane was huge for golf, but yes.
Stojakovic. James Thompson is still bigger.
It's a good point. Good point. Good point. And that's it. Unk. Yes.
Yep.
Unk. So, yeah. So what we have learned from our year in review is that Illini basketball dominates the day across the board because they did this little thing called go to the Final Four.
Even Robert concedes that.
Yes.
No. I'm kidding you, but at no point are you ever like, oh, basketball's overshadowing my football.
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
Let's just remember the second part of my one of the 17 thing. What I put in my Twitter bio in 2009 that I didn't know would become a thing is I'm one of the 17 Illini fans who cares more about football than basketball. Part two says, and because of that, everybody thinks I hate basketball. Like, everybody interprets, like, oh, you like football? You must really hate basketball. No, I love basketball. I love Illini basketball. I just happen to love Illini football a little more.
Well, at least you love all your grandkids the same.
That's right. Can you, by the way, can you hear them outside? They're playing with the neighbor kids.
I cannot.
Okay.
But that's awesome. Okay.
I'm kind
of
hoping.
I think you should get all your grandkids together and say, listen, I love all of you.
Yes.
But I love one of you more. But don't want you to think that I don't love you just because I don't love you as much as this other grain.
But you'll find out at Christmas whose pile of presents is bigger.
That would be the absolute worst thing you could do. But you're allowed to have a sport. You're allowed to have a favorite sport.
My wife and I had the conversation about how, like, when buying, you know, I just, when I give gifts, it's just Illini clothing to everyone that I know. And so now I have seven. Like, when I go to the infant and children's section at the store, I have to buy, usually get two things for everybody. So that's 14 articles of clothing, of Illini clothing from that section next Christmas.
My grandmother pulled me aside when I was a young boy and told me I was her favorite grandchild. She had eight. After she passed, it came to light that she did that to every grandchild. All eight of us were told that we were her favorite.
That's a great way to go about it. I might put that into play here in the next 15 minutes, right out that window right there.
Start using that to your advantage.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Hey,
enjoy your grandfather time. Yeah.
Because of your Jackson Pollock painting, you're now my favorite grandchild.
Just do grandchild power polls.
Yes.
These are rankings. These are the playoff rankings as of right now, kids. But they can change.
That's right. You can always change. The track and field championships are this weekend. Yes.
You can play your way out.
I love it.
Thanks to our sponsor, the U of I Community Credit Union. And thanks to Logic Co-working for providing a space here to do some recording. And, well, thanks to your grandkids in their house for providing a space for you, Robert.
That's exactly right. Thanks to my daughter-in-law for allowing me to use her desk.
We'll talk to you again next time when we light the eye.